Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
That's our goal every day, to help connect faith to life. We have some very practical helps coming up on today's program. I know you're going to want to stay tuned for it, and I always appreciate you listening in. I'm Neil Stavem here at this side, and on the other side there it's Ryan Nisley running the controls, and he's always more than adequate.
As are you, sir.
Well, thank you. Yes, well, that is, yes. So, you know, being from the upper Midwest, you know, adequacy is a high standard.
So it absolutely is. Sure. Right. And you meet and exceed it every single day.
That's good to know. We hadn't talked about, you know, not everybody across our Faith Radio audience cares about the fishing opener in Minnesota, but it did happen last weekend. So
true.
And I didn't participate.
Well, the fish are safer that way.
Well, that's it didn't matter. But there is a sort of a fishing opener related story, a little story that's gone viral as a result of the fishing opener in Minnesota.
This is kind of the coolest thing I've read all day. It's about Bobby Tufts, and it's reported out of Fargo by the Forum. And he's this gentleman who's 4 years old, and he's been elected mayor of his town, of Dorset, population 22, Minnesota. He's been elected mayor. Apparently, Neil, each year, anyone can pay $1 to put his or her name in a hat for a chance to have the title and the key to the city for a whole year. Bobby Tufts.
Now, it's great for Bobby, but, I mean, I think a couple of years ago there was a chicken that was the mayor. So, I mean, it's, you know, the competition is not stiff. So, I've been to Dorset a number of times, actually.
Did you get any support for mayor?
No, I didn't. We stopped and had it's a little stop along the way of one of the bike trails across northern Minnesota.
Oh, very nice.
And a lot of little, basically just little restaurants and shops and things. So you can get some great ice cream. So salute to Bobby. In fact, it has gone viral, hasn't it? I mean, he's this little video that the local news department did. They got him on talking about fishing and a little bit of everything else.
10,000 hits on YouTube as of this morning. Pretty impressive.
It is cute, yes. And it's a fine little community as well. If you're looking for, you know, I think folks in the Red River Valley probably, I think there's a number of Fargo-Moorhead folks that head over that direction for vacations and like. So
Bobby will be there to greet them.
Yes. I think he sits on one of those rocking horses and waves his hat. It's cute. Anyway. So, all right, when they get slightly older, then the hope is that they go off to college or university. Mm. And in that process, that is a pretty significant transition. I mean, I'm not sure how you transition from being a four-year-old mayor of a town of 22 people to going back to just be a four-year-old. But
there's a whole metamorphosis that takes place, yeah.
But we're going to talk about transitions that take place at a little bit different level. And for that, we have invited Jeff Schott back to join us. Jeff is founder and president of Youth Transition Network. It's a national bridge between youth ministries and college, career, and military ministries. And Jeff has also been leading a lot of research in this area, has started this from a simple vision to a reality. There's more than 50 members in this coalition of national ministry leaders across the nation that are trying to offer some solutions to deal with the issue of students walking away from their faith when they get on the college campus, which sadly happens at pretty alarming numbers. But we're going to find out a little bit more about that today, and glad to have Jeff, who's also a pastor. He has been our guest in the past, and it's always nice to check in with him. Jeff, well, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Neil, it's great to be back with you. I appreciate you bringing this topic up because it's so near and dear to my heart, and I think near and dear to so many parents' hearts that we certainly don't want to see our kids walk away from the faith and get hurt in the adolescent years or in the transition to college. And unfortunately, we're seeing way too much of that today.
I know you've shared your story before, though. I mean, grew up in Illinois, went to university in Arizona, and, you know, folks dropped you off, and that was kind of it, right?
Yeah, I'll never forget that that day when they dropped me off. My roommate wasn't there yet, and there were a bunch of things that I hadn't even considered. And that's what we've been finding as we've been talking to high school seniors out there and juniors, that they haven't even considered the reality of leaving home. They're looking forward to it. They can't wait for it. They believe it's going to be easy. They're looking forward to the freedom. And if they're, one of the things I'll say to parents, if your kid's really straining or looking forward to freedom, watch out on the other side, given some of the other research we've done on the younger ages. But for me, that was a shocking transition. And what we found with students is it's way more shocking for them today than it has been at any other point in time.
Is there something that we have maybe missed in terms of parents or students thinking about this transition that we haven't anticipated? I mean, we use the word freedom and think, well, it's, you know, we've been going to high school in the past 4 years. It's, you know, this is just more schooling. We are acting like adults sometimes anyway, I suppose, right, at 18-year-olds. So what is it that we have kind of overlooked maybe as parents or even as teens?
Well, I think there are three different areas that we've overlooked. There's stuff that we need to be doing with younger kids to have them ready for the responsibility. Then there's stuff that as high school students, because of maybe the way we've been approached in our schools and maybe approached in our homes, that we're not ready for. And then there's this whole culture shock aspect that we haven't looked at as we look at the actual walking onto campus, where we're finding the typical student falls within the first 24 to 72 hours on campus. And they're falling because they haven't anticipated any of the changes. Their parents haven't really prepared them for any of the changes, neither have their youth ministries. And as a result, they hit this campus, and their needs to be loved and accepted spike through the roof in a way they've never felt before. They get hit with a wave of loneliness that they didn't anticipate, and as a result, they're open to bonding with the first thing that kind of accepts them. And unfortunately, because we're typically dropping them off alone with no forethought related to connecting them to ministries, the first thing that normally they connect to is the party scene, which tends to go crazy in the freshman year. It's the freshman craze. And once they've entered that, the likelihood of them returning quickly to the church it diminishes exponentially.
One of the reasons why we wanted to talk to Jeff today, because we're coming to college graduation time or high school graduation time, and rather than waiting till September 1 to have this conversation, we wanted to talk about going back a little further. In fact, we'll get to that in a moment. But let's just review those statistics again. I mean, you say in the first 24 to 48 hours, and when we talk about kids walking away from their faith, is it really a walk away, or is it just kind of a timeout? I mean, adolescence is kind of a time when we step out on our own in a number of ways anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, I wish it was just a timeout, and let's just talk about that for a moment. I mean, I've heard a lot of people kind of say, well, they come back later, so it's not that big a deal. But what we want to point out is when they leave home, they're making some major decisions over the next 24 to 36 months. They're making decisions of lifestyle, of career, often of spouse. And if they've stepped away from the church, even if it's just for a short time, they're stepping away when all these decisions are being made. And as a result, we see this actually contributing to the divorce rate in the church, because let's say they select their spouse, they take a 4, 5, or 6 year hiatus from the church, then there's problems in their marriage and their family, they return to the church hoping for a quick fix, only discover that they really never built their relationship on the foundation of being involved in church or the foundation of the word. And as a result, there's no quick fix found in the church. There's a divorce that happens in the church then. But the problem wasn't then like we think it was. It's actually back here where we didn't get them ready and they didn't transition well to life on their own.
I'm talking with Jeff Schott, who's founder and president of Youth Transition Network. And you can find out more at ytn.org. They also have liveabove.com. We're going to talk about some parents training sessions as well. All these things we're going to get to in the moments ahead. And I invite you to join the conversation. Maybe you have a student who's facing a transition, you know, or you've walked through that and you have some perspective to share, or maybe you're a student and have some questions about it as well, or in youth ministry of some sort, we'd love to just encourage you along the way today. In fact, we do have some resources. We just pull out a few things that might be useful to you to pass on to a graduate you know. There's a God's Little Instruction Book for the class of 2013. We've got a copy of the updated version of Crazy Love from Francis Chan, which is a wonderful resource. A couple other things here from David C. Cook, and we'll pass those on to you if you want to join the broadcast today at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. And if you do get one of these resources and want to give it to a teen in your circle of friends, of course, just stick some cash in there, will you, as well, right?
Absolutely.
Getting a little book is fine, but, you know, cash always speaks well. So anyway, 877-93-FAITH. More with Jeff Shaw in just a moment. The importance of choosing wise friends, that they will make a difference in your life. You walk with the wise, you'll grow wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. And we're talking today with Jeff Schott, founder and president of Youth Transition Network. And Jeff and his wife have seen this and have a burden for students that are wandering away, that are, I think you call them lost sheep. Right, and so working on the college campuses, and it began this ministry. Now it's a coalition of ministries, and Jeff serves it also doing a bunch of research now as we help to kind of come through some solutions to the problems. And I guess, Jeff, one of the big things that we want to talk about, and I know that you're passionate about too, is that we're not going to wait till the day we drop our kids off at the school, but we want to work back a little farther. So how far back, sort of upstream, if you will, do we have to go to help in these transitions?
You know, it's been surprising as we did the research, and we started with looking at the college transition and the culture shock students were going into. We also discovered that a lot of students were stepping away from youth ministry involvement in their junior and senior year in high school. And as we dug into that, we found a dual life going on in a large percentage of our kids, where they were working together to get around mom and dad's rules and restrictions and working together to cover up what they were actually doing. And this dark culture in our youth ministries was actually discouraging the faith of our postmodern youth, because they look at their experience to try and validate the truth we're teaching. And with this dual life culture going on in our ministries, it's invalidating the teaching. It's why we believe biblical literacy is dropping. And so as we dug into that, we stepped back even further, and what we discovered was that parents of 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds were missing a vital transition. When the adolescent brain changes, it happens 18 months prior to puberty, and this is why so many parents one day are thinking, everything's going great with my kid, and the next day they go, man, what happened? They were being more responsible, now they're less responsible. They seemed to be maturing, now they seem to be really emotional. They seem to be listening, now they're oppositional. And it's really because the hormones that begin to flow 18 months prior to puberty create puberty, cause some major changes in the adolescent brain. And in the back half of the brain, synapses start to get created. And with all that growth going on in the back half of the brain, the activity in the frontal lobe decreases. And what we found amazing in this process of interacting with all these preteens, teens, and college students is that they all point to this time frame where they tend to lose connection with their parents. And when they lose that connection, what happens is the world gains influence, their friends gain influence, and we actually believe that doesn't need to be the case from all the research. And when we lose that influence and the world gains the influence, that's where the dual life starts to come from. And parents are unwittingly oftentimes contributing to the dual life that their kid is leading because they're not making a change. As the brain changes, as they're moving towards adulthood, we tend not to change our approach. We tend to use our habits of raising children, and we don't shift to developing adults. And so we would say, potentially, you begin preparing your kid for the transition to leaving home as early as age 10, 11, 12. And there's many specific things you can do to get them ready so that they succeed in the transition to life on their own. It's been amazing to watch it in my own life and in the lives of parents that have begun to make these changes around the country as a result of some of the stuff that we're doing with parents called the Secrets of Influential Parenting. And it's just been amazing to see kids' lives totally turned around, that we're leading a horrendous dual life. It's been more fun to see parents see the changes and begin to respond to those changes and change their approach so that they actually maintain the primary position of influence in their kids' lives through the preteen and teen years.
Which, on the one hand, is encouraging to know that we can still have influence, but maybe discouraging to know that if we don't change our approach, that influence is quickly eroded, right? I mean, and so what is that? What is the shifting habit that parents have to get into in that sort of that 18-month pre-puberty period?
Yeah, I think, you know, what we have to move from is we need to stop looking at our kid as being a child. And we need to realize in biblical times they were adults at 13. And then Mary was 14 or 15 when she had Jesus and handled that very, very maturely. And I think if most of us were honest today as parents, we sat back and looked at our preteens and teens, we'd say, there's no way my preteen or teen would handle this so maturely. And so my question has been, has the brain regressed since biblical times, or has our approach to parenting changed? And I believe it's the latter, because we've, as a society, said you're not an adult till 18 or 21. So parents have tended to say, okay, you're my child in these preteen and teen years, when God designed the brain to be oppositional so that they would break away, so that they would leave home. And what I find ironic is oftentimes as the kids get older and closer to leaving home, parents realize they're not managing their own lives, that the parents are still doing management of their finances, still doing management even sometimes of their homework and of their schedule and managing through curfews. And they're realizing my kid's probably not ready for life on their own. And what's scary to me is we see this delayed adolescence today with 24 and 25-year-olds still living at home. And what I think has happened is we've treated them like children through this brain phase where they're supposed to be breaking away. And we're holding on so tight we don't let them develop those skills. And then their brain comes out of this cycle around age 17, 18, and they realize it's a pretty sweet deal to stay at home. And all of a sudden we're stuck with a kid that's not functional or has come back from college because they didn't do well in the transition. And we're going, where did we go wrong? And I think it's way back here. And so what are some of the shifts that need to be made? Number one, we need to move from seeing them as children and seeing our role moving from saying I'm parenting a child to now I'm developing an adult. If every parent out there right now of a preteen or teen said, okay, I'm going to start viewing my role as developing an adult, what would change? What things would you do differently if you weren't seeing your kid as a kid? And would you put more responsibility in their hands? Would you allow them some more freedom so that they're ready for freedom when they leave home? There's a bunch of things we can do, and we like to look at Jesus and what he did with the disciples as a great model.
Now, it seems like we've heard research that suggests that the brain, though, isn't fully developed until maybe mid-20s. So we've got this kind of early on issue where we need to allow them to kind of develop their brain, I guess, on their own in some ways, or to be developing an adult, and yet they don't really develop, right? So there's kind of, I guess, a tension there.
Yeah, well, I think it's funny. I've heard that a lot from Christian parents. Well, so they're not going to fully develop till 25, so I still need to approach them like a child. What we fail to recognize is the brain wasn't fully developing till 25 in Jesus's day either. And yet they were still considered adults. They were still getting married. And they were taking on far more responsibility than our kids are today. And a lot of parents are frustrated with the lack of responsibility and the lack of take charge in their kids. And as we've done the research, what we found is it stems from that transition where when their brain starts to get oppositional, when their brain is telling them to break away because of the changes that are going on, a lot of parents interpret that as, oh, my goodness, my kids become less responsible, my kids become oppositional, I need to clamp down. And when they clamp down, what we're finding is that the kid is now old enough, smart enough to go, okay, if my parents are going to clamp down, I'm going to put on an act for my parents because I don't like conflict. Unless you've got the really strong personality kid that goes into open rebellion, most of them, when we see these changes and we tend to clamp down and we tend to micromanage on homework and we tend to micromanage on other elements, they put on an act for us and start to lead a totally different life away from us. And that's where the real danger comes from, because that dual life stays in check because we're in their lives and the church is in their lives, and it stays in check most of the time. They're only able to lead that dual life a small percentage of the time. But if that's their habit and that's their mindset as they hit the college campus, it's why they take to the party scene like fish sometimes in water, not because they've already been doing it. We just had no idea as parents.
Because you talked about early on, you said, if you have a child that's really kind of pushing the freedom thing, that's a kind of a red flag. So there's a natural part, sort of the oppositional, I think, phrase you used it. But if that goes too far, then that's a concern.
Well, yeah. And so what do we do as parents with preteens and teens? One of the things that we're seeing cause kids to blow up in the transition to college and end up back home is finances. And we've not taught them to manage their finances, or if we're doing anything at all, some of us now are starting to listen to Dave Ramsey and to do some of the things with our teens that way. But we're recommending what my parents did with me back at age 10. And at age 10, my parents came to me and said, hey, look, we're going to give you $75 a month. And I'm like, woohoo. And I'm like, but there's one catch. You've got to buy all your clothes. You've got to pay for the gifts at Christmas. You've got to save up money to be able to buy gifts for the family at Christmas. You need to buy your shampoo and all of these different things and basically fill out a ledger to show what category the money was spent in and on what date. And they didn't regulate where it was spent and how, because they wanted me to learn the value of money and prioritize funds. And as we've had parents doing this through our Secrets of Influential Parenting conference, it's been amazing as parents come back and they're like, there's no way this is going to work. This is going to turn into a train wreck. And then I'll get these reports of these kids that are doing amazing things, going through the shopping mall and not spending a dime because it's now their money and they're in control of it. And kids that have become entrepreneurial, kids that are saving money, kids that are learning the value of money at a very young age, so that when they leave home, boom, you don't have to fear that side of the equation at all. They've already been managing their lives. And that's where I think maybe we're making such a huge mistake as parents today. We're so fearful of the mistakes and the challenges and the issues kids can get into that we aren't getting them self-managing before they leave home. Now, I've got a daughter who's 18. She's heading to college next year. And she's been self-managing her own finances for years. She's been self-managing her own schedule, her own homework assignments, her own everything. She's been managing her own life for the last 3 years. I have zero fear of her going off the campus and blowing up next year, because we moved into this at age 9, 10, 11 with her, and by age 15, she was managing her own life. And they can do it.
Jeff Schott is founder and president of Youth Transition Network. We're talking about some secrets of influential parents and more. We're talking about making transitions between building a bridge between youth ministries and college career and military ministries, and getting some great insight on parents and teen brain development, all those things. We'd welcome you to join the conversation as well. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. If you want to drop us a note, you can go online, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. Or you can always use Facebook as well. It's Connecting Faith and Neil Stavem, and we'll talk more with Jeff Shaw in just a moment. Talking today about a wonderful resource that can help us as parents and as ministry leaders to help the transition as our students go from high school to college, and maybe they go from junior to senior high, and just make some of those life transitions. Jeff Schott is founder and president of Youth Transition Network. And it's a national bridge between youth ministries and college, career, and military ministries. This vision has grown to a 50-plus member coalition of national ministry leaders across the nation that are looking to address the lost sheep, if you will, those Christians who have left the church when they get out on their own. And they've also developed wonderful seminars, Secrets of Influential Parents. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Jeff, you mentioned, talked about sort of, you know, teaching responsibility, managing finances and the like, helping us see that we are parenting to develop an adult as opposed to maybe, you know, raising a child. But I'm wondering, will responsibility diminish that dual life? I mean, if the dual life is the problem, is teaching or allowing or giving responsibility, is that a way to sort of diminish that?
We have found that it is, and basically it is because of this. When the teen's brain is telling them to break away, and we are fearful of giving them responsibility, they end up feeling not believed in and trusted. And when they end up feeling not believed in and trusted, that's when they tune us out as parents, and they tune in the world, they tune in their friends. And when they tune that in, you know what's coming behind that. It's likely the dual life. And what we've found from talking to these youth that are leading dual lives, and we're talking really high percentages. I wish I could give better news, but we're finding 75, 80, 90% of kids in our youth groups and in our Christian schools leading an intentionally deceptive dual life with their parents. In fact, a national study that just came out recently showed that 70% of kids are hiding their true life from their parents via the internet. And so what we found with this dual life, though, is that the kids are feeling guilty. The kids aren't happy. What concerns me most are the kids that have gone beyond feeling guilty, and they ask me, how do I get back to feeling guilty again? And what we found, unfortunately, is that because we can't continue to approach them like children, and that normally means kind of a harsh way of dealing with failure, they've failed. They've done something. They're feeling guilty, but they've got nowhere to go to walk in the light. And the scripture says if we walk in the light, we'll have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus will purify us from all unrighteousness. And what we're finding with these kids is they've got nowhere to walk in the light. They can't walk in the light at their Christian school. They can't walk in the light with their parents. They can't walk into the light in their youth ministries because things leak. And then parents react. And what we're finding is that the few parents out there that have changed the culture of their family, begun to operate more like an adult with their youth, create a culture where they're having true fellowship, where things aren't hidden from the kids, and the kids aren't hiding things from their parents. And in this vein, they see Jesus. They see Jesus in us as parents. We see Jesus handling failure with Thomas and Peter, and they're scattering in fear, and Peter standing there just like one of our teens and saying, I still don't believe you, Dad. And Jesus, does Jesus say, hey, dude, I've got all power under heaven and earth. You better believe what I'm saying or I'll just erase you from the planet. Or does he say, you know, you're in my house and you're under my rules and you'll do it my way or else? Or does he say, hey, Thomas, you failed. You're feeling guilty. You still don't want to believe what I'm saying. You know, what would it take to get you back in the game, Thomas? And Thomas thinks, and he goes, dude, I'm going to have to stick my fingers in your side. And Jesus thinks, and he goes, man, that's going to hurt like bleep. Okay. But if that'll get you back in the game, Thomas, that's what it's all about for me, and I want to get you back in the game. And so go ahead and stick your fingers in my side. And so where I believe, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child is true, what it doesn't say is where a child ends and something else begins. And if we don't transition in our approach, we end up almost forcing our kids to walk in the darkness. And we're not having true fellowship with them. And they're getting trapped in the darkness. They're feeling incredibly guilty. And then they just want to leave the church.
And as you mentioned earlier, that, you know, in those first 24 to 48 hours, I mean, that when they get away, they're on campus, they're looking for love, and they're lonely. And we can see where those two come in when if they're coming from an environment where belief and trust aren't there.
Yeah, exactly. If they're coming from an environment where we've continued to use our habits of parenting kids with what are, in biblical times, adults, and they're not feeling believed in and trusted, they're not feeling connected to their parents, they're screaming for freedom, and then they hit all that loneliness and all that change and all that stress, they're going to try and escape that loneliness. And they're going to escape it in ways that, man, we don't want to see. And, you know, when we took our first transition video, Be Prepared, it's a powerful video for students, juniors, and seniors that are getting ready to leave for college, and we took it in its most boring form, no cutaway footage of the campus, no cutaway footage of the party scene, no music in the background, and we played it for 35 kids involved in a college ministry at Arizona State University. We played it just to get their feedback, and at the end they gave this boring video with none of this other stuff, the music or the cutaway footage, they gave it a standing ovation. And I was shocked, and I said, wait a minute, why'd you give this an ovation, and would you please give me some feedback? And the first girl that started to share broke down crying. The second girl that started to share broke down crying. The third guy that started to share broke down crying. I called time out and said, man, what Pandora's box did I open? And I said, how many of you had something like this happen to you in the first semester on campus? And over three-quarters of the hands in the room went up, and the ministry leader's mouth hit the floor. And they had no idea. And this is the 30% of kids that are staying in the faith. What's happening to the 70% that are leaving? And that's why I'm so passionate about this, is that if we'll change our approach as parents coming into the preteen and teen years, we don't need to lose the influence. We can be their shepherds through the teen years, and we can set them up to transition well. But if we lose our influence, if we lose our voice, and most of us aren't even aware we have because they're acting the part for us, we're in big trouble when they head off the campus.
Had a note from Tommy, checked in on myfaithradio.com. He says, my soul resonates with what I'm hearing here. I deeply want to learn how to help families of teens learn how to keep from losing their kids. How's your ministry delivering their materials? Are there books or Bible studies? How can I find out more? It'd be a good time to talk about websites.
Yeah, well, the research that we've done is really well illuminated for parents and ministry leaders in the book Going, Going, Gone. It's written by me, Jeff Schott. YTN.org or our CrossingThinIce.com site has a great resources area where you can see the live seminars we do. We also have most of it available on DVD, CD, audio series, etc. So CrossingThinIce.com is a place I'd recommend.
CrossingThinIce.com, or you can get the main page at YTN.org for Youth Transition Network, which is Jeff Schott, founder and the president of that. You talked a little bit about youth ministers. I mean, I'm sure that youth ministers are maybe just as challenged and wondering how to approach this as parents are, and maybe in. And if kids are living the dual life, they don't necessarily know any better than parents do, do they?
Well, it's really frustrating for youth pastors because they've been given a model of ministry that they need to follow. And they keep teaching the truth, and a lot of them after 10, 15 years are really discouraged because they're seeing the truth isn't changing the lives. And it's because of the dual life culture within their ministry. because of the postmodern mindset and post-Christian mindset of and how these youth evaluate things. And the old model of youth ministry is based upon a modern precept for modern kids. And now we've got a modern precept working on postmodern kids. One of the things that we're encouraging youth pastors to do is, one, get the book, read the research, going. But two, you've got to address the dual life culture. It has to get addressed. Now, we've developed a backdoor way to do that that allows the kids to actually redefine the culture of their ministry, make a commitment to it, and then take a huge step of faith into it. It's called Reboot. But I'm looking for youth pastors to even test that with, to see if youth pastors can pull that content off by themselves and get the kids to change the culture without an outside speaker coming in. Because we've got to address that dual life. But again, it starts with parents missing the transition and unintentionally creating the dual life in their kids in their homes. And then it grows and gives full birth in senior high. It starts in junior high. And I mean, just one story that will illuminate why parents need to begin working on this early. I'm talking to a mom at a conference, and she goes, "Not so worried about my daughter, worried about my son because he's, you know, caught him doing pornography, but we got to handle. We got the computer in the middle of the room, and we've got you know, internet protection software." I said, "Well, you know, have you dealt with the Game Boy and the SD card slot? Have you dealt with the 3,000 pictures that are on his memory?" And she's like, "Oh my goodness, we haven't dealt with most of what we need to deal with." But then I said, "What? You said something about your daughter." She goes, "Yeah, well, you know, last year when she was 12, she sent a naked picture of herself from the waist up to a boy." And you know, I said, "And what did you do?" "Well, we talked about it." And she said, "The guy just kept nagging her. That's why she did it." And I said, "You bought that?" And she goes, "Yeah." I said, "I hate to tell you this, but I'm fairly convinced your daughter's been addicted to pornography for at least 18 months to 2 years." She goes, "Well, pornography's not a girl's issue." I says, "It is today. They've been raised on video. They're highly more visual. It's destroying young women today." I gave her a way to go talk to her daughter and to ask questions and to give her permission to walk in the light. And her daughter walked in the light, had been doing pornography since she was 10. Now, this is a great Christian home, folks. And that's why I'm saying we've got to get proactive in our parenting. We have to become shepherds. We can't be waiting for issues to arise. That's our parenting style today is reactive. We wait for an issue to come, and then we hammer it. And then we wait for an issue to come, and we hammer it. There is nothing proactive about that. And to get our kids through the minefield of today, this thought process of isolating them and removing them from culture and micromanaging them is causing them to not be ready for life on their own. And it's causing them to blow up when they hit the campus. But then we've got this rub of how do we get them through this all this minefield if we're not doing that? And I would argue it's by being Jesus. I would argue it's by having the voice of the good shepherd where the sheep decide, "I want to follow you, not I have to follow you." True influence comes when our preteens and our teens say, "Mom and Dad, I look at you and I buy you more than I buy my friends, and I'm granting you the influence in my life." And when our kids do that, when they say, "You're the good shepherd, I'm going to follow you," we don't have to fear the rest of the stuff, and we don't have to fear the world.
Just thinking how different it is from, you know, even 10 years ago or certainly 30 years ago in terms of, you know, parenting and some of the challenges that are coming our way, but yet the principle should be the same, right? If we're modeling after Jesus, that hasn't changed.
Right, and yet what I've found is that the form of parenting most of us were raised under, well, a lot of us said, "Hey, look, when I become an adult, I'm never going to do this to my kids," because we didn't like it as preteens and teens. It wasn't working for us. But no one's taught us to do something different. So I'd argue a lot of what we're doing is generationally passed down, and it's not rooted in Jesus. It's not rooted in how Jesus really handled failure. It's not rooted in Jesus looking and pointing the disciples to the Holy Spirit as opposed to his expectations as he was going to leave their lives. It's not. There's a lot of stuff that Jesus did that isn't in the parenting styles we've grown up under or have been taught.
Jeff Schatz, my guest. He is the founder and president of Youth Transition Network. You can find out more at their website, ytn.org. I recommend it to you. Or the other website we've talked about, crossingthinice.com. There's a great deal of research out about how to be an influential parent. And Jeff has done a lot of work in that area, and we're talking more about it. He's also written a book called Going, Going, Gone. We'll talk some more with Jeff about the transitions we want to talk about for those that might have a student ready to transition into college. What steps should we as parents be taking today? We'll get to that in a moment and more. 877-933-2484 is our phone number. This is Connecting Faith, and we're talking today about, getting some secrets of influential parents, some good strategies, some real insight today from Jeff Schott, and we're thankful that he can join us. He's founder and president of Youth Transition Network, and he's also written a book called Going, Going, Gone. One of the websites we've touched on is called crossingthinice.com, and I could recommend that to you to get some more insight. Lois called in and asked, when you were talking, Jeff, about the $75 a month that your parents gave you at age 10, would that be a reasonable amount for kids today, or should it be higher because of inflation?
Yeah, I think what I recommend is every parent's budget is different, and every parent's amount that they're spending on their kid is different. So what I would do is I would take a 30-day period and track what you spend on your kid, and then think about some of the things that didn't happen that month. Let's say, you know, Christmas and needing to buy Christmas gifts, and then break down what you think they would need for that and spread it across the 12 months. And so I think it's different for every parent out there. Now, our budget's been exceedingly tight because of the ministry, and continuing to advance new things for parents as opposed to paying ourselves. And yeah. So, you know, we're doing about $70 a month for our 10 and 12 year olds. And so sometimes we're having to step in and help because we're seeing that's not enough when we're able to do that. But it's been great for them just to be part of the team and part of figuring out how to manage life in the ministry. And so the whole family's really part of this ministry team and this message. In fact, when my daughter goes out to conferences and listens, she'll actually speak and she'll answer parents' questions. And parents are shocked at what's going on. And at how strong a preteen or teen can be in the face of temptation. And Scripture does say he won't tempt us more than we can bear. It's a verse we have a hard time believing as parents of preteens and teens.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, Jeff, if someone listening right now has a college graduate a high school graduate heading off to college, what sort of things could we be doing now over the summer months? Campus ministries vary in caliber and quality, but what things should we be doing for a youth in transition today?
Okay, number one, if you've got a kid heading to college next year, in a few months, one, I would beg you to either get a copy of or show them online the Be Prepared video that we have. We use that to motivate kids to use the liveabove.com site to locate and contact the college ministries on their campus. And the best thing would be is to have them do that in the next week or two, because a lot of these college ministry leaders leave their posts and are on summer assignments overseas, and so they may not get back and respond to these contacts until a week or two before school starts if we don't get our kids to consider connecting with the college ministries like right now. And so, you know, Be Prepared is a video that's available at the YTN.org site and at the Live Above site. You can get a copy and sit down and watch it in your home, or you can watch it online, and we would highly recommend that, because that'll get their eyes open to the challenge that's coming. If you're concerned that your kid isn't ready to manage their money, isn't ready to handle the social change, because the top three issues snaring kids in the transition are, number one, change in social environment, number two, change in academic protocol, and number three, managing money. And social change, the academic protocol is the fact that we've been reminding of their homework. We've been nagging them to get their projects done. The high school cares a lot and reminds them and tells them about exams, and then they hit the college campus and we're not there, and the college professor could care less if they turn in their homework or not, and kids blow up academically. And third is the finances. So if you're very concerned that your kid isn't necessarily ready, isn't self-managing, and maybe dropping them off on campus is going to cause them to fail in one way, shape, or form or another. And this happens for community college kids, Christian college kids, university kids. It's ubiquitous. We'd really recommend doing something called Succeed with your kid. It's got all these student videos from all these interviews we did of college students that have college students saying, this is an issue, and here's why, and here's what happened to me. And it makes the challenge of the change real to the kids. And then it's got content behind that with questions that facilitate conversations between parents and youth in a healthy way about finances, about the social, about roommates, about all of those different issues. And we highly recommend parents of juniors and seniors doing Succeed with their graduate. And when you order, if you order Succeed, we'll send you the Be Prepared DVD for free to help you motivate your kid to sit down and go through this content with you. Parents that have done it say, wow, it opened these conversations I thought I could never have with my kid. Wow, it totally changed my entire discipleship group's, senior discipleship group's view of the college transition. And so we'd recommend that highly.
The facilitating conversations is probably one of the biggest challenges, isn't it? For whatever age our kids are, but certainly from 9, 10, or 12 years on, I mean, we really need to work on that to build in that trust aspect.
Yeah, and I think I heard a statistic that as we were coming on air earlier that, the average father spends 37 seconds with their kid interacting a day or something like that. That's just, Oh, that's shocking. My kids would say the opposite is true. But so much of it is, do we make that change in our approach? Do we become their coach, their mentor, their shepherd? And do we keep the lines of communication open by changing our approach? And when we do that, what we found is other national research, not ours, 69% of teens want more involvement from their parents in their life. We would have a hard time believing that from the way they act, but what they're looking for is a different type of involvement, and because of the way we're approaching them, they've got their hands in our face. They don't want to listen to us. They don't want to talk with us. I don't have that with any of my four kids because of what we learned from talking to preteens and teens in this research.
Great encouragement today from Jeff Schott. And Jeff, are you encouraged? I mean, as you've done a lot of research, you've been at this for a number of years. The world is an increasingly difficult place. So, what are you? You're keeping going in the ministry and you're growing it.
Yeah, I'm highly encouraged, and here's why I'm encouraged. Number one, I think the church is waking up to the fact that a lot of what we're doing today isn't working and that we're losing influence on every front. And I think if we will get on our knees and turn to God and say, well, obviously we're the problem here, because we keep pointing at the world. If the world's the problem, if it's the movies, if it's the television, if it's the video games, if that's the problem, we need to throw in the towel because we're not going to change that. But if we can change ourselves as parents, if we can change our approach, if we can look at the postmodern and not argue with their mindset like happened in Europe, but begin to understand it, figure out, and lay down our lives as the modern leaders to allow things to change, I believe this postmodern generation is exactly what our country needs, because they care about community. They care about authenticity. They care about providing an experience that actually looks like what we teach. And I think that's what would reach our nation today. In Acts chapter 2 type church. And moderns just, we don't value those things as much, so we don't create them, and we don't create the Acts chapter 2 church. We value truth and knowledge and evidence and all of those things. But this next generation is who we need, and I believe that if we'll lay down our lives and we'll listen to them and we'll stop arguing with them and we'll value them, I believe that they can turn the country around, because it's been 17 to 25-year-olds that have led every major missions movement and most of the revivals in our nation's history. It hasn't been us adults. We've got to stop looking at young people negatively. We've got to start believing, trusting, and empowering them, because they don't evaluate risk the way we do, they're willing to go do crazy things for God if we'll let them.
It's a great place to wrap up our time today. Let me give a couple quick addresses, web addresses. YNT.org is the main website for Youth Transition Network, YNT.org. Liveabove.com has some of the great resources. You can find out about the Be Prepared video there. You can find out more about the research and help at CrossingThinIce.com. And the book, Going, Going, Gone, it's from Jeff Schott. We'll put links up on our website as well, MyFaithRadio.com. We also post the show so you can catch the podcast if you missed part of it. Jeff Schott, founder and president of the Youth Transition Network. Jeff, always great to visit with you. Thanks for the work you're doing, and blessings to you in this strategic ministry.
Thanks so much for having me on, Neil.
Jeff Schott, join us today here on Connecting Faith. Glad to have you listening. Tomorrow we're going to talk a bit about career and calling. It'll be a great discussion. You'll be back here at noon.